You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Barbara Seiler. She's in Zurich, where she tells me the sun is shining. Barbara, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
So that was off the record when you said that, but it sounds like it's a beautiful day in Zurich.
It is a beautiful day, and that's not very, not so usual around this time of the year, so it's actually nice. And it's the good weather brings people to the gallery, and that makes me happy as well.
So let's talk about the gallery. Just to jump right into what's happening now, can you tell me a little bit about the current show that's happening?
Yeah, we're currently showing an exhibition of two Dutch artists, Marijn van Krij and Nicolas van Duivenboden. Marijn is in my gallery program for some time. And when we talked about doing a second solo exhibition, he came up with the idea to invite another artist, and Nicolas, who is a good friend of him, and the two of them are corresponding through letters, actually, like still physical letters a lot. And in the Marijn's work is very much based on he takes images and texts and existing imagery and music as a starting point, and then creates from those images. And he believes that art is kind of made in reaction, and art is also made in recognition of art, and that kind of serves as the starting point. And in the first solo show that we did together 2 years ago, he had a large drawing, which is the inside of an envelope, and on the right corner, he cut out a small piece which had the form or the size dimension of a postcard. And I sent this to Nico. And the letter was originally sent, the first letter from Nico was sent in this envelope to Marijn. So that was kind of a starting point or a base for the exhibition that we have now. So each work in the show is relating to conversation, to the act of sending and receiving letters, or the act of conversation, and then often this conversation is about art and the process of making art, or to reflect about art, or to react to art that has been created a long time ago, or also art that is developing as the dialogue is happening as well.
And there's a number of things that are happening in this current show also. There's, as I understand it, and from what I've seen on the website, there's projections, there's drawings, there's what look like paintings. Is there a number of mediums happening in this show?
Yes, and that's also very typical for most of the artists that I work with, that they don't work in just one medium. It's really the content, and then they choose the right medium. So it can be film, it can be video, it can be drawings, paintings, photography, objects, installation. There's a lot of installation. So this exhibition with Marijn and Nicole is very, very typical for the gallery program and for exhibitions and the type of works that we exhibit.
And also, Marijn and Nicola, the work seems to be, in a sense, also about perhaps authorship, because unlike a typical two-person show or where both artists are kind of independent authors of their work, so to speak, creators of their work, Is it correct that in this show there's it's, as you're saying, it's a reaction to work? So is it all Marijn's work, or is it really a combination of both, a kind of collaboration?
That's a very good point. It's and authorship is a very focal point in both artists' work, And Marijn, in fact, he appropriates a lot of work from, I mean, Picasso, Klee, etc., which then starts as a starting point for his work. And in this show, each work kind of can be linked to one of the two artists. So there is the author, but intellectually, there is both artists' work in each work. So it raises the question of the authorship, the intellectual part, the physical part of the artwork in the end.
And does that change at all how it enters the market, so to speak? I mean, when people are collecting a particular artist's work, and in a sense, this is also challenging to the process of collecting one artist. Is it, or am I kind of understanding that?
I think in that case, it's really a work that carries Marijn's name. Is a work by Marijn, and the collector then owns a Marijn van Krij drawing or work, and the same with Nicole's work. But I see that more and more happening, that there are different artists working on one work or collaboratives. And then, of course, that raises the question of the authorship, and also how to go about that, and how to treat that, and how to, once it's in the market, once it's in a collection, how you go about that. And of course, these collaborations, they change as relationships of human beings go through transition. So what happens if this collaboration falls apart, or that raises very interesting questions.
And let's move back a little bit, Barbara, perhaps to the beginning of the gallery. How did you start the gallery? Where did that come from?
Well, there's the short version and the long version. The longer version is that I grew up kind of surrounded by art all the time, but then it took me some time to realize that that could actually be my profession. And,
okay, but wait a minute. I like that. I like the longer version. Tell me what did that mean? You grew up surrounded by art. That was were your parents artists, or what does that mean?
Well, my mom, she was a writer, and my father was a natural scientist, but he invented new types of color dyes, so textile dyes. So I grew up, like, my very first impressions were all these stacks of fabrics in different color hues, reds, blues, and yellows, which he brought back from the lab, because they were doing, you know, for the patterns, they just used a small part of the fabric, and the rest he brought home so we could play with that and do our own creations, etc. So this is a very early, the colors and the color hues, and also the accessibility of it is one of the very first impressions that I can recollect. And then my parents, they collected art, but they went to a lot of museums and galleries, and they just took us along. And I grew up in Basel, and Basel has a very rich museum and scene. So as far back as I can remember, I've been in exhibitions and always had this conversation about art with my parents, and then later with friends. And I think that very much influenced me. Art was just accessible. And then that was also a time, you know, before internet, and art magazines were not so easily accessible. But we had Art Basel every year. One time a year, we had this range of what was happening right now in the art world presented to us, like, in front, and we could just go and take it all in and talk to the galleries and ask questions. And I think that has influenced my whole.
Well, that's very powerful. So when did that happen? What point in your life did that happen, that you were going to Basel and now you're. Right, you're looking at dealers, you're seeing how that works, you're seeing an enormous amount of art. Was What point in your career was that? Was that when you were very young? Or?
From like before I could walk, one of my first memories that I have is from an exhibition in the Kunstmuseum in Basel. So and then later on, the older I got, I went by myself to the museum. Often before I met friends in town, I went just for an hour to see to look at art. And I had my favorite paintings in the museum, and I would just go there and kind of be there and be in their presence. And then,
do you remember what those paintings were? Because I had experiences like that as a young man too. What paintings were you looking at? Do you remember some of your favorites?
Yeah, two are really important ones are Barnett Newman's, which the collection of the museum has, the large blue paintings, almost monochromes. And I remember talking with my mom about why is it art and what makes it to be art. And also, you know, this is probably an impression that something that art did with me before I could really voice it, that just feeling the presence of art, like this strong connection that happens between the viewer and an artwork, and then something happens and you cannot really describe it, what it is. And this is still happening. I mean, this is something that has been with me throughout my whole life, and I think then eventually made me start the gallery, because I wanted to be with that all the time and every day.
So I want to talk about the start of the gallery, but when you asked your mom about the Barnett Newman and said, you know, why is this art or what is this, did she say exactly what you were just saying? There's just kind of an experience, or how did she explain that to you?
I don't remember so much. Like, I just remember us talking about it. So, again, the dialogue, not so much like any conclusions that we had, but more the process and the reflection and thinking about art and what does it make to be art and what does it do with us and why and what is happening and I mean, at some point when I couldn't read, my mom would also you know, read like the text or of an exhibition to me and things like that. So, but I think it was always that part to talk and reflect and think and exchange. I think exchanging is also an important part, and exchange ideas and have this conversation about art and then things that happen with it. That was,
I think, so
important.
Too. That I mean the reason I ask is because that was, you know, my first experience was a painting that I used to visit was a Joseph Albers, Homage to a Square, and it was the same thing. I would say to my mother, what is happening here?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the conversation we had changed the way I look at art for the rest of my life. You know, it was so wonderful and rich. And I imagine the Barnett Newman in the same way. You could go back and sit in front of that, and it's this kind of very immersive, almost gazing piece that you can always get more from, I would think.
Yeah. Exactly. And also you almost form a relationship with the artwork. And then as you grow older, sometimes the relationship changes and it goes through different, you know, through different stages as you mature and as you go through different stages in your personal life. But then some of the works, and these two Barnett Newmans, they have stayed with me throughout my whole life and still now, and they are on view in the museum. I go there and it's like meeting very close friends and having this interaction again with the artwork.
And before you started the gallery, which I want to talk about, the very beginning of, did you also go to school for curatorial studies or art history or something relating to that?
No, I did something completely different, because I always, throughout my whole teenager time, I wanted to become a filmmaker, and we spent our holidays making Super 8 millimeter films and with our friends. And so there was, like, I was, this whole time I was thinking I was going to be making films. And then at that time, that was not so easy to just go to a film school. And I spent a year in the United States after graduating, which was great. I could take like broadcasting, announcing, and filmmaking, etc. But then I had to go back to Switzerland and start university. And then through a lot of different, you know, things, I realized that I had a much better chance to get into one of the four best graduate programs for filmmaking in the United States if I had a international university degree. And then I was looking for something that just, you know, it's kind of easy and fast. And more as a joke, we came up with economics and business admin, which was a bit like
wait, to be clear, you took the economics so you could then get into the graduate school of film in the United
States.
Exactly.
That was just the way I then started to study economics in St. Gallen, which is a business school university here in Switzerland. Because it's also very school-like and has a good reputation, I thought, I do that, and I finish that, and then I go to the United States and I start film school. And that's the thing that I really want to do. But then within that, the studies, I got really attracted by this abstraction of financial market models. And I thought that was really, it just attracted me, and also the kind of the speed of markets. And so I started to work in finance, much to the disgust and horror of my parents and all their friends. And I did that for 5 years. I worked in private equity, and then it was like waking up one morning and I thought, I've done all the deals that I wanted to do, and I quit. And then I realized that I know a lot about art, but I have no idea how it works, what you do as a gallerist. And because I knew at that time that I wanted to be a gallerist, that was just somehow clear.
And not a filmmaker. You no longer wanted to be a filmmaker at that point.
No, because I also realized that, you know, then that 5 years had passed, etc., and would have kind of been gone back. Somehow it was just very clear that I have to work with art and start a gallery. And I think it probably was a bit like going back to the very early impressions of my life and the very early things and roots. So, and then I realized I don't know how to run a gallery. And at that time, my cousin opened a gallery, but more like secondary market and dealer. So I started to work for him and be able to ask all the stupid questions, and he was amazing. He explained me everything, and then I started to work for a bigger gallery here in Zurich, and I did that for 2 years and learned really the tools and art fairs. We did all the big art fairs and just like the whole infrastructure and backbone of a gallery, and then I felt I was ready to start my own gallery.
Well, that's such a wonderful story, because it's interesting how going into finance was about the most rebellious thing you could do in your family.
Yeah. No, my parents were so glad when I kind of went back, and also I think they were just very embarrassed to tell their friends that their daughter was working in finance. It was just very uncool thing to do.
That's wonderful. Of course, in the United States, most parents would be thrilled about that, unless they are very much involved in the arts and culture, which clearly your family was. When you first began the gallery, how did you select the artist and begin your program?
It's a good question. I mean, some artists I knew. There was the very first show that I did was called You Can Tell a Cowboy by the Horse He Rides. And it was a bit kind of to show what the gallery program would be all about and what was important to me. And most of the artists in that group exhibition stayed with the program. And I mean, there were some changes, of course. But it was that was kind of the starting point. And most of them, some of them I already knew. Some were recommended to me by other artists, and some are, I think one artist, I saw her work just Googling and serving and looking at art, and I contacted her, and it stayed pretty much the way how I start working with new artists now, that I just read a lot and I go to exhibitions, not enough, unfortunately, because I work too much, but I often at night I read and Google and just go from one exhibition to the next and start getting deeper into an artist's work and what I can find. And then I have these different watch lists that I start following artists, and then eventually we do studio visit and sometimes an exhibition materializes. But that was very much how I did the first exhibition, how I still work now.
And are you still looking for artists, or is your stable of artists kind of full? Is your program sort of complete in a sense?
Well, I think it should never be complete. You should always be out and looking at new artists and kind of develop the program. But of course, that also brings you to certain limits, because you can only work with that and that many artists if you have a close relationship and really want to influence and influence their career.
And earlier you were saying, just to get a sense of how that watching process works, you were saying, you know, very, very kindly before we began that as you've been listening to this radio series, you know, it's introduced you to some people, or you've kept watching some people. And I didn't ask you too much about that, but you said something to the effect of, which you just said now, that you have separate folders where you're watching people or something like that, which is interesting because that's your research process. So you see an artist or someone that you like, and they go into a folder that's something that you revisit and watch to see someone's career. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's a bit. I consume a lot through social media. Instagram is a very good source for me. And just different newsletters and art magazines online and offline. And so it's this big kind of flow of information and images. And then I think it still functions very similar to the very first interactions or encounters I had with artworks, that it sometimes just clicks or something. I look at so many images but with some, just something happens in my brain and it attracts me, but visually and intellectually. And then I start looking deeper into it, and I Google the name, and I start looking at websites and the information that I can find. And then I start storing it in the different folders that I have. And then sometimes, you know, forms like, and also artists keep showing up. I mean, if I have some people on the radar, and then I see a group exhibition and I see that work again, or so it becomes stronger and stronger. And at some point, either I work on a group exhibition for the gallery, and then it makes sense to invite a specific artist, or I try to arrange a studio visit and start the dialogue.
And you said you use Instagram a lot, which is very interesting to me. How do you use Instagram? You're searching for the word art or artist or Zurich or you're just following many artists through Instagram. How does that process work? Because Instagram is a kind of very interesting, purely visual medium.
Mm-hmm. And I think I like it because it's so visual, and it's you know, you cannot change the format. It's what you see is what you see. And then you do something with it or not. And I follow curators, critics, also collectors. There are some collectors who are really great in in finding or making discoveries. And some other galleries that I like, and of course artists, and that kind of this. It's not that I look up specific words, but it's really kind of the constant feed. And then, you know, I do that often, like when I brush my teeth, I'm on Instagram and I just flip through, or before I go to bed, or when I wait for something, or if I'm in a queue, then I flip through it, and then, you know, and it makes it very easy. I can store it and or then follow and start digging deeper into it. So I like this kind of very standardized image that you get on Instagram, but then you can do something with it.
I like that too. It's been great talking to you. And in closing, I think what I'd like to ask is, and I hope this doesn't put you on the spot, I've recently asked other people in the interviews this question, is there a book that you're currently reading now or have recently read that you want to mention? It doesn't have to be on topic. It could be a novel or anything at all. Is there anything that you've been reading? It could also be a blog or something else anything that you want to share with us?
Well, I think something that I keep going back reading again and again, or it's something that's kind of a bit the bigger picture or like a frame around the gallery is Hannah Arendt, and I'm a big fan of her work, and this kind of you know, where she talks about dicta activa and the different type of works in your life. Because for me, that was, for a long time, I was always thinking, my mom, she was writing books. My dad, he had all these patents and he made some really big discoveries. And my husband is an artist, so there's all the artworks he creates. And kind of the question, what do I create? Or what is left once I'm no longer here? And then I came across Vita Activa and this definition of labor, work, and action, and how, you know, like what my parents or my husbands do, the work that they leave behind, and which is so important for a lot of other people. But then where I see myself with the gallery, and it started to make sense what I make for me in terms of a bigger picture, was this definition of action, and that which she defines as interaction. Action is always something that is with in interaction with somebody else, and that's how I see the gallery as kind of a platform where I enable this interaction, and I enable artists to develop their work, to show it, and I bring other people in who see the work, and this kind of platform, and me as the gallerist who makes these interactions, and actually leaving something which is not so tangible or visible, but which initiates new works or developments or exhibitions or careers or encounters or people meeting each other and leaving something in their life through the gallery, which, you know, is not tangible, but that has something that's, you know, there's something left once I'm no longer here.
I like that. And the artist that you were saying that you keep referring back to was Hannah Darbovin?
You mean the book?
The book, yeah.
It's Hannah Arendt, you know, the famous writer and publicist who lived in the last century, who wrote a lot on politics, and she was a student of Heidegger, but then developed a very, very important writings and
Yes, okay. I just wanted to be clear about that, and I'll also put a link to that in this. Barbara, thanks so much for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.